He said, "What would you do if I fell in love with you?" And my entire body answered his question. Heat filled my blood, the gaps in my bones. My heart felt suddenly alive with emotion, and I didn't know how to say what I was thinking, what I wanted to say, which was, "Is this love?" And I never had the chance. Navid knocked on the door hard, and we were like shrapnel flying apart. Ocean looked a little flushed. He took a second, looked around, looked at me. He didn't say goodbye exactly. He just looked at me. And then he was gone. 2 hours later, he texted me. "Are you in bed?" "Yes." "Can I ask you a weird question?" I stared at my phone for a second. I took a deep breath. "Okay. What does your hair look like?" I actually laughed out loud. Before I remembered that my parents were sleeping, girls never seemed to care about the state of my hair, but guys had been asking me this question forever. It was always the same question, and they never seemed to grow out of it. "It's brown, kind of long," and then he called me. "Hi," he said. "Hi," I smiled. "I like that I can imagine where you are now," he said, "what your room looks like. I still can't believe you were here today." "Yeah, thanks for that, by the way. Your parents are amazing. That was really fun." "I'm glad it wasn't excruciating," I said, but I felt sad suddenly. I didn't know how to tell him that I wished his mom would get her shit together. "My parents are officially in love with you, by the way."
"Really?"
"Yeah, I'm sure they'd trade me in for you any day of the week." He laughed, and then he didn't say anything for a while. "Hey," I finally said.
"Yeah?"
"Is everything okay?"
"Yeah," he said.
"Yeah." But he sounded a little out of breath.
"Are you sure?"
"I was just thinking about how your brother has terrible timing." I was only a beat behind. It took me a second, but I suddenly understood what he was trying to say. I'd never answered his question, and I was suddenly nervous.
"What did you mean," I said, "when you asked what I would do? Why did you phrase the question like that?"
"I guess," he said, and took a sharp breath. "I was just wondering if it would scare you away." There was a part of me that adored his uncertainty. How he seemed to have no idea that I was just as far gone as he was.
"No," I said softly. "It wouldn't scare me away."
"No?"
"No," I said. "Not a chance."
27. Ramadan was over. We celebrated, we exchanged gifts, and Navid devoured the contents of our entire kitchen. The fall semester was quickly coming to a close. We were tipping over into the second week of December, and I'd managed to keep some level of distance in place between myself and Ocean for as long as either of us could bear it. It had been almost 2 months since the day he'd kissed me in his car. I couldn't believe it. In the quiet, relative peace that surrounded our careful efforts to be inconspicuous, time sped up, flew by. I'd never been so happy, maybe ever. Ocean was fun. He was sweet, and he was smart, and we never ran out of things to talk about. He didn't have a lot of free hours, because basketball was a demanding extracurricular activity and a massive time suck, but we always found a way to make it work. I was happy with the compromise we'd made. It was safe here. Secretive, yes, but it was safe. No one knew our business. People had finally stopped gawking at me in the hallways. But Ocean wanted more. He didn't like hiding. He said it made it seem like we were doing something wrong, and he hated it. He insisted, over and over again, that he didn't care what other people thought. He didn't care, he said, and he didn't want a bunch of idiots to have this much control over his life. Honestly, I couldn't disagree with him. I was tired of hiding, too. I was tired of ignoring him at school, tired of always giving in to my cynicism. But Ocean was a lot more visible than even he knew or understood. Once I started paying closer attention to him and to his world, the subtle gradations of his life began to come into focus. Ocean had ex-girlfriends at this school, old teammates, rivalries. There were guys who were openly jealous of his success, and girls who hated him for being uninterested. More important, There were people who built their careers on the back of the high school basketball team. I knew by now that Ocean was really good at basketball, but I didn't know just how good until I started listening. He was only a junior, but he was outperforming his teammates by a wide margin, and he was, as a result, attracting a lot of attention. People were talking about how he might be good enough to win all kinds of state and national Player of the Year awards, and not just him, but his coach, too. It made me nervous. Ocean had this quintessential all-American look, the kind of look that made it easy for girls to fall in love with him, for scouts to know where to place him, for the community to think of him, always and forever, as a good boy with great potential and a bright future. I tried to explain why my presence in his life would be both complicated and controversial, but Ocean couldn't understand. He just didn't think it was that big of a deal. But it wasn't something I wanted to fight over, so we compromised. I agreed to let Ocean drive me to school one morning. I thought it would be a small, carefully measured step, totally innocent. What I kept forgetting, of course, was that high school was home to infinite clichés for a reason, and that Ocean was, in some ways, still inextricable from his own stereotype. Even where he parked his car in the school parking lot seemed to matter. I'd never had a reason to know or care about this, because I was the weirdo who walked to school every day. I'd never interacted with this side of campus in the morning, never saw these kids or spoke to them. But when Ocean opened my door that day, I stepped out into a different world. Everyone was here, here in this school parking lot. This was where he and his friends hung out every morning. "Oh, wow, this was a bad idea," I said to him, even as he took my hand. "Ocean," I said, "this was a bad idea." "It's not a bad idea," he said, and squeezed my fingers. "We're just two people holding hands. It's not the end of the world." I wondered then what it would be like to live in his brain. I wondered how safe and normal a life he must have lived in order to say something like that, so casually, and really, truly believe it. Sometimes I wanted to say to him, for some people, it really was the end of the world. But I didn't. I didn't say it because I was suddenly distracted. An unnerving quiet had just infected the groups of kids standing nearest to us, and I felt my body tense, even as I looked forward and stared at nothing. I waited for something, some kind of hostility, but it never came. We managed to weave our way through the parking lot, eyes following our bodies as we went, without incident. No one spoke to me. Their silence seemed to be infused with surprise, and it felt, to me, like they were deciding what to think, how to respond. Ocean and I had very different reactions to this experience. I told him we should go back to arriving separately at school, that it was a nice try, but ultimately a bad idea. He did not agree, not even a little bit. He kept pointing out to me that it had been fine, that it was weird, but it wasn't bad, and he insisted, most of all, that he didn't want their opinions to control his life. "I want to be with you," he said. "I want to hold your hand and eat lunch with you, and I don't want to have to pretend that I'm not like..." He sighed hard. "I just don't want to pretend not to notice you, okay? I don't care if other people don't like it. I don't want to worry all the time. Who gives a shit about these people?" "Aren't they your friends?" I said. "If they were my friends," he said, "they'd be happy for me." The second day was worse. On the second day when I stepped out of Ocean's car, no one was surprised. They were just assholes. Someone actually said, "Why are you fucking around with Aladdin over here, bro?" This was not a new insult, not to me. For some reason, people loved using Aladdin to put me down, which made me sad, because I really liked Aladdin. I loved watching that movie as a kid. But I'd always wanted to tell people that they were insulting me incorrectly. I wanted them to understand that Aladdin was, first of all, a guy, and that, second of all, he wasn't even the one who covered his hair. This wasn't even an accurate insult, and it bothered me that it was so lazy. There were so many better, meaner alternatives from the movie to choose from. Like, maybe, I don't know, compare me to Jafar. But there was never a good time, during these types of situations, to bring it up. Regardless, Ocean and I did not have the same reaction to the insult. I was irritated, but Ocean was angry. I could feel it then in that moment that Ocean was even stronger than he looked. He had a lean, muscular frame, but he felt suddenly very solid standing next to me. His whole body had gone rigid. His hand and mine felt foreign. He looked both angry and disgusted, and he shook his head. And I could tell he was about to say something when someone, very suddenly, threw a half-eaten cinnamon roll at my face. I was stunned. There was a moment of perfect silence as the sweet, sticky bun hit part of my eye and most of my cheek, and then dragged slowly down my chin, fell to the floor. There was icing all over my scarf. This, I thought, was new. Whoever threw the thing at me was suddenly laughing his ass off, and Ocean just kind of lost it. He grabbed the guy by the shirt and shoved him really, really hard, and I wasn't sure what was happening anymore, but I was so mortified I could hardly see straight, and I suddenly wanted nothing more than to just disappear. So I did. No one had ever thrown food at me before. I felt numb as I walked away, felt stupid and humiliated and numb. I was trying to make my way to the girls' bathroom because I really wanted to wash my face, but Ocean suddenly caught up to me, caught me around the waist. "Hey," he said, and he was out of breath. "Hey!" But I didn't want to look at him. I didn't want him to see me with this shit all over my face, so I pulled away. I didn't meet his eyes. "Are you okay?" he said. "I'm so sorry." "Yeah," I said, but I was already turning around again. I just need to wash my face, okay? I'll see you later." "Wait," he said. "Wait." "I'll see you later, Ocean, I swear." I waved, kept walking. "I'm fine." I mean, I wasn't fine. I would be fine, but I wasn't there yet. I got to the girls' bathroom and dropped my bag on the ground. I unwrapped my scarf from around my head and used a damp paper towel to scrub the icing off my face. I tried to clean my scarf the same way, but it wasn't as effective. I sighed. I had to try and wash parts of it in the sink, which just made everything wet, and I was feeling more than a little demoralized as I hung the slightly damp scarf around my neck. Just then, someone else walked into the bathroom. I was glad that I'd at least finished with the scrubbing of my face before she came in. I'd just pulled my ponytail free. I'd had to wash a little icing out of my hair, too, and I needed to retie the whole thing, when she walked over to the sink next to me. I knew I'd made myself super conspicuous in here, because I tossed my bag to the floor, disassembled myself, and was surrounded at the moment by little mountains of damp paper towels. But I hoped she wouldn't notice, wouldn't ask questions. I didn't know who she was, and I didn't care. I just didn't want to deal with any more people today. "Hey," she said. An instinct forced my head up. I'll always remember that moment, the way my hair fell around my face, how it shook out in long waves as I turned, the hair tie still wrapped around my wrist. I looked at her, a question in my eyes, and she took a picture of me. "What the hell?" I stepped back, confused. "Why did you..." "Thanks," she said, and smiled. I was dazed. She walked out the door, and it took me a minute to find my head. It took me another few seconds to understand. When I did, I was struck still, and I suddenly felt so sick to my stomach I thought I might faint. It had been a really shitty day. Ocean finally found me in the hall. He took my hand, and I turned around, and at first he didn't say anything. At first, he just looked at me. "Some girl took a picture of me in the bathroom," I said quietly. He took a tight breath. "Yeah," he said. "I know." "You do?" He nodded. I turned away. I wanted to cry, but I swore I wouldn't. I promised myself I wouldn't. Instead, I whispered, "What's going on, Ocean? What's happening right now?" He shook his head. He looked devastated. "This is my fault," he said. "This is all my fault. I should have listened to you. I never should have let this happen." And just then, some guy I'd never even seen before walked past us, slapped Ocean on the back, and said, "Hey, man, I understand. I'd hit that, too." Ocean shoved him hard, and the guy shouted something angry and fell back, landing on his elbows. "What the hell is wrong with you?" Ocean said to him. "What happened to you?" They started yelling at each other, and I just couldn't take it anymore. I needed to leave. I knew a little about digital cameras, but I didn't own one myself, so I couldn't, in that moment, understand how people were sharing photos of me so quickly. I only knew that someone had taken a photo of me without my scarf on, without my consent. and was now passing it around. It was a kind of violation I'd never experienced before. I wanted to scream. It was my hair. I wanted to scream. It was my hair, and it was my face, and it was my body, and it was my fucking business what I wanted to do with it. Of course, nobody cared. I ditched school. Ocean tried to come with me. He kept apologizing, and he tried so hard to make it better. But I just wanted to be alone. I needed time. So I left. I walked around for a while, trying to clear my head. I didn't know what else to do. There was a part of me that wanted to go home, but I worried that if I locked myself in my bedroom, I might never come out. I also really, really didn't want to cry. I felt like crying. I felt like crying and screaming all at the same time, but I didn't want to give in to the feeling. I just wanted to push through this. I wanted to survive it without losing my head. I knew hours later that things had gotten bad when Navid started texting me. If Navid had heard about this, things had to have blown up, and he was worried. I told him I was okay, that I'd left campus. I'd ended up hiding in a local library. I was sitting in the horror section on purpose. Navid told me to come to practice. Why? Because it'll help get your mind off things. I sighed. How bad is it? A few seconds later. Well, it's not great. I slipped back on campus only when I knew school was officially out. I went to my locker to grab my gym bag, but when I opened the door, a piece of paper fell out. I unfolded it to discover that there were two pictures of me, printed side by side, one with my scarf on, one without. I looked confused in the latter of the two, but the photo wasn't otherwise unflattering. It was a perfectly okay picture. I'd always liked my hair. I thought I had nice hair, and it photographed well, actually. Maybe better than it had looked in real life. But this revelation only made the whole thing more painful. It was more obvious than ever that this was never meant to be a silly stunt. The point here was never to make me look ugly or stupid. Whoever did this had wanted only to unmask me without my permission, to humiliate me by intentionally undermining a decision I'd made to keep some parts of me just for myself. They'd wanted to take away the power I thought I had over my own body. It was a betrayal that hurt somehow more than anything else. When I showed up to practice, Navid just looked sad. "You okay?" he said, and pulled me in for a hug. "Yeah," I said. "This school blows." He took a deep breath, squeezed me once more before letting go. "Yeah," he said, and exhaled. "Yeah, it really does." "People are so fucked up," Bijan said to me, shaking his head. "I'm sorry you have to deal with this." I didn't know what to say. I tried to smile. Carlos and Jacoby were sympathetic. "Hey, just point me in the right direction," Carlos said, "and I'll happily kick the shit out of someone for you." I actually smiled then. "I don't even know who did it," I said. "I mean, I saw the girl who took the photo of me, but I don't know anything else. I don't know anything about her," I said, and sighed. "I don't know people at this school." And then Jacoby asked me what happened, how the girl had even managed to get the picture of me. And I told them that I'd been in the bathroom cleaning up, because some guy had thrown a cinnamon roll at my face, and I tried to laugh about it to make it seem funny, but all four of them went suddenly quiet. Stone-faced. "Some dude threw a cinnamon roll at your face?" Navid looked dumbstruck. "Are you fucking kidding me?" I blinked, hesitated. "No." "Who?" It was Jacoby now. "Who was it?" "I don't know." "Son of a bitch," Carlos said. "And Ocean didn't do anything?" Bijan this time. "He just let some guy throw food at you?" "What? No," I said quickly. No, he I think he started fighting with him, but I just walked away, so I didn't..." "So Ocean knows who this guy is." Bijan again. He wasn't looking at me, he was looking at Navid. "I mean, I think so," I said carefully. "But, it's really not..." "You know what? Fuck this shit," Navid said, and he grabbed his stuff. So did the other guys. They were all packing up. "Wait, where are you going?" "Don't worry about it," Carlos said to me. I'll see you at home, Navid said, squeezing my arm as he walked past me.
Wait, Navid.
You'll be okay walking home today? Jacoby now.
Yeah, I said. Yeah, but...
All right, cool. We'll see you tomorrow.
And they just left.
I heard the next day that they really had kicked the shit out of this guy, because the cop showed up at my house, looking for Navid, who shrugged it off. He told my horrified parents it was just a big misunderstanding. Navid thought it was hilarious. He said the only people who ever called the cops over a street fight were white people. In the end, the kid didn't want to press charges, so they let it go. Navid would be fine. But things, for me, just kept getting worse. 28. It was one thing for me to have to deal with this sort of thing. I'd been here before. I knew how to handle these blows, and I knew how to walk them off, even as they wounded me. And I took great care to appear so deeply, thoroughly unmoved by the whole photo debacle that the mess diffused itself in a matter of days. I gave it no life, no power, and it withered easily. Ocean, on the other hand, was new to this. Watching him try to navigate the at-once overwhelming and heartbreaking experience of the unmasked mob, it was like watching a child learn about death for the first time. People wouldn't leave him alone suddenly. My face had become notorious overnight. And Navid kicking the crap out of one of these kids for throwing a pastry at my head had complicated everything. I mean, I didn't love Navid's methods, but I will say this. No one ever threw anything at me, not ever again. But kids now seemed terrified to even be near me. People were both angry and scared, which was possibly the most dangerous combination of emotions, and it made Ocean's association with me more outrageous than ever. His friend said awful things to him about me, about himself, things I don't even want to repeat, and he was forced into an impossible position, trying to defend me against slanderous statements about my faith, about what it meant to be Muslim, about what it was like to be me. It was exhausting. Still, Ocean swore he didn't care. He didn't, but I did. I could feel myself pulling away, retreating inward, wanting to save him and myself by sacrificing this newfound happiness, and I knew he felt it happening. He could feel the distance growing between us, could see me shutting down, closing off, and I felt his panic. I could see it in the way he looked at me now. I heard it in his voice when he whispered, "Are we okay?" on the phone last night. I felt it when he touched me, tentatively, like I might spook at any second. But the more I pulled away, the steadier he became. Ocean had made a choice, and he was so willing to stand by that choice that it made everyone angrier. He was alienated by his friends, and he shrugged it off. His coach kept harassing him about me, and he ignored it. I think it was that he showed them no loyalty, that he seemed to care so little about the opinions of people he'd known for far longer than he'd ever known me, that finally pissed them off so much. It was the middle of December, a week before winter break, when it all got really ugly. It was just a prank in the end. It was a stupid prank. Someone had wanted to mess with Ocean, and the whole thing spun so far out of control it threw our entire world off its axis. Some anonymous person hacked into the computer systems and sent out a mass email to the entire school district's database. All the students and teachers in the entire county, even the parents who were on school mailing lists, got this email. The note was terrible, and it wasn't even about me. It was about Ocean. It accused him of supporting terrorism, of being anti-American, of believing it was okay to kill innocent people because he wanted access to 72 virgins. It called for him to be kicked off the team. It said that he was a poor representative of his hometown and a disgrace to the veterans who supported their games. The note called him horrible names. And the thing that made it even worse, of course, was that there was a picture of the two of us holding hands at school. Here was proof, it seemed to say, that he'd made friends with the enemy. The school started getting angry calls, letters. Horrified parents were demanding an explanation, a hearing, a town hall meeting. I never knew people could care so much about the dramas surrounding high school basketball, but holy hell, It was apparently a very big deal. Ocean Desmond James was a very big deal, it turned out. And I don't think even he'd realized just how much until any of this happened. Still, it wasn't hard for me to understand how we got here. I'd been expecting it. I'd been dreading it. But it was so hard for Ocean to stomach that the world was filled with such awful people. I tried to tell him that the bigots and the racists had always been there, and he said he'd honestly never seen them like this, that he never thought they could be like this. And I said, yes, I know. I said, that's how privilege works. He was stunned. We'd run out of places to find privacy. Even just to talk about all that had transpired. We talked at night, of course, but we rarely had a chance to connect during the day in person. The school was still so abuzz with all this bullshit that I couldn't even stop to speak to him in the halls anymore. Every class was an ordeal. Even the teachers looked a little freaked out. Only Mr. Jordan seemed sympathetic. But I knew there wasn't much he could do. And every day, people I'd never once made eye contact with would lean over and say things to me when I took my seat. What does he have to do exactly to get the 72 virgins?
Isn't it against your religion to date white guys?
So are you, like, related to Saddam Hussein? Why are you even here if you hate America so much? I told them all to fuck off, but it was like a game of whack-a-mole. They just kept coming back. Ocean blew off basketball practice one afternoon so that we could finally find a moment alone together. His coach was suddenly drowning the team in extra unnecessary practices. And Ocean said it was because his coach was trying to keep him busy, that he was trying to keep the two of us apart. I knew that Ocean's decision to ditch practice would probably blow up in both our faces, but I was also grateful for the moment of peace. I'd been dying to see him, to speak to him in person, and see for myself that he was okay. We were sitting in his car in the parking lot at IHOP. Ocean rested his head against the window, his eyes squeezed shut, as he told me about the most recent development in this shitstorm. His coach had been begging him to make the whole thing go away, and he'd said it would be easy. The school would issue a statement saying it was a stupid hoax, that the whole thing was nonsense, no big deal, done. I frowned. Ocean looked upset, but I couldn't understand why. This didn't seem like a terrible idea. That actually sounds like a great solution, I said. It's so simple. Ocean laughed then, but there was no life in it, and he finally met my eyes when he said, "In order for the statement to stick, I can't be seen with you anymore." I felt like I'd been punched in the stomach. "Oh," I said. In fact, it would be best, his coach had said, if Ocean were never publicly associated with me in any way ever again. There was already school drama circling the two of us, and now this, the picture of us together, he said, was just too much. It was too political. All major news outlets seemed to indicate that we were about to go to war with Iraq. And the news cycle, though always insane, had been perhaps especially insane lately. Everyone was on edge. Everything was so sensitive. Ocean's coach wanted to tell everyone that the photo of us together was just another part of the prank, that it had been photoshopped. But this explanation would only have been believable if Ocean also promised to stop spending time with me. There could be no more photos of the two of us together. "Oh," I said again. "Yeah." Ocean looked exhausted. He ran both hands through his hair. "So do you..." I took a quick, painful breath. "I mean, I'd understand if you..." "No." Ocean sat up, looked suddenly panicked. "No. No, hell no, fuck him, fuck all of them, I don't care." "But..." He was shaking his head hard. "No," he said again. He was staring at me in disbelief. "I can't believe you'd even..." "No, it's not even a discussion. I told him to go to hell." For a moment, I didn't know what to say. I felt anger and heartbreak, and even, suddenly, an immeasurable swell of joy, all in the same moment. It seemed impossible to know which emotion to follow, which one would lead me to the right decision. I knew that just because I wanted to be with Ocean didn't mean it would or should work out that way. And my thoughts must have been easy to read, because Ocean leaned in and took my hands. "Hey, this isn't a big deal, okay? It seems like a big deal right now, but I swear this will blow over. None of this matters. They don't matter. This doesn't change anything for me. But I couldn't meet his eyes anymore. Please, he said. I don't care. I really don't. I don't care if they cut me from the team. I don't care about any of it. I never have.
Yeah, I said softly. But I'd have been lying if I said I didn't think my presence in his life had only made things worse for him. He didn't care. But I did. I cared. Things had been snowballing fast, and I couldn't pretend I wasn't scared anymore. I cared that Ocean was about to be blacklisted by everyone in this town. I cared about his prospects. I cared about his future. I told him that if they cut him from the team, he'd lose his chance at getting a basketball scholarship, and he told me not to worry about it, that he didn't even need the scholarship, that his mom had set aside some of her inheritance to pay for college. Still, it bothered me. I cared. I was shaking my head, staring into my open hands when he touched my cheek. I looked up. His eyes were anguished. Hey, he whispered. Don't do this, okay? Don't give up on me. I'm not going anywhere. I felt paralyzed. I didn't know what to do. My gut said, walk away. Let him live his life. Even Naveed told me that things had gone too far, that I should break things off. And then, the next day, Coach Hart cornered me. I should have known better than to talk to him alone, but he caught me in a crowd and managed to bully me loudly into coming into his office. He swore he just wanted to have a friendly chat about the situation, but the minute I stepped inside, he started shouting at me. He told me I was ruining Ocean's life. He said he wished I'd never moved to this town, that from the moment I'd shown up I'd been a distraction, that he'd known all along that it must have been me putting ideas in Ocean's head about quitting the team, causing trouble. He said that I'd shown up and made a mess of everything, of the entire district, and couldn't I see what I'd done? Parents and students across the county were in chaos. Games had been postponed, and their reputation was on the line. They were a patriotic town, he said, with patriots among them, and my association with Ocean was destroying their image. This team mattered, he said to me, in ways that I could never understand, because he was sure that wherever I came from didn't have basketball. I didn't tell him that where I came from was California, but then he never gave me a chance to speak. And then he said that I needed to leave Ocean the hell alone before I took away every good thing he had in his life.
You end this, young lady, he said to me. End it right now.
I really wanted to tell him to go to hell, but the truth was he kind of scared me. He seemed violently angry in a way I'd never experienced alone in a room with an adult. The door was closed. I felt like I had no power, like I couldn't trust him. But this little chat had made things clearer for me. Coach Hart was a complete asshole, and the more he screamed at me, the angrier I became. I didn't want to be bullied into making such a serious decision. I didn't want to be manipulated, not by anyone. In fact, I was beginning to believe that walking away from Ocean now, at a time like this, would be the greatest act of cowardice. Worse, it would be cruel. So I refused. And then his coach told me that if I didn't break up with him, that he would make certain that Ocean was not only kicked off the team, but expelled for gross misconduct. I said I was sure Ocean would figure it out.
Why are you so determined to be stubborn?
Coach Hart shouted, his eyes narrowed in my direction. He looked like someone who screamed a lot. He was a stocky sort of guy with an almost permanently red face.
Let go of this, he said. You're wasting everyone's time, and it won't even be worth it in the end. He's going to forget about you in a week.
Okay, I said. Can I go now? Somehow he went redder.
If you care about him, he said, then walk away. Don't destroy his life.
I honestly don't get why everyone is this upset, I said, over a stupid game of basketball.
This is my career, he said, slamming the table as he stood up. I've dedicated my entire life to this sport. We have a real shot at the playoffs this season, and I need him to perform. You are an unwelcome distraction, he said, and I need you to disappear, now.
I hadn't realized as I walked home from school that day how far this craziness would go.
I hadn't realized that his coach would be so determined to make this go away, to make me go away, that he'd actually be willing to hurt Ocean in the process. Here, with enough space between myself and his screaming coach, I was able to process the situation a little more objectively. And honestly, the whole thing was starting to freak me out. It wasn't that I thought Ocean wouldn't recover from being kicked off the team. It wasn't even that I thought I couldn't tell Ocean what his coach had said to me, that he'd basically threatened me into breaking up with him. I knew Ocean would believe me, that he'd take my side. What scared me most, it turned out, weren't the threats. It wasn't the abusive rhetoric, the blatant xenophobia. No, what scared me most was that I guess I just didn't think I was worth it. I thought Ocean would wake up, dizzy and destabilized by this emotional train wreck, to discover that it hadn't been worth it, actually. That I hadn't been worth it. That he'd lost his chance to be a great athlete at a peak moment in his high school career, and that as a result, he'd lost his chance at playing basketball in college, at one day playing professionally. If this shit show was to be believed, Ocean was good enough to be all this and more. I'd never seen him play, which seemed almost funny to me now. But I couldn't imagine that so many people would be this upset if Ocean weren't really, really good at putting a ball in a basket. I felt suddenly scared. I worried that Ocean would lose everything he'd ever known, everything he'd been working toward since he was a kid, only to discover that, I wasn't even that great in the end. Bad deal. He would resent me. I was 16, I thought. He was 17. We were just kids. This moment felt like an entire lifetime. These past months had felt like forever. But high school wasn't the whole world, was it? It couldn't have been. 5 months ago, I never even knew Ocean existed. Still, I didn't want to walk away. I worried he'd never forgive me for abandoning him, especially not now, not when he told me every day that this hadn't changed anything for him, that he'd never let their hateful opinions dictate how he lived his life. I worried that if I walked away, he'd think I was a coward, and I knew I wasn't. I looked up suddenly at the sound of a car horn. It was relentless, obnoxious. I was halfway down a main street, walking along the same stretch of sidewalk I followed home every day, but I'd been lost in my head. I hadn't been paying attention to the road. There was a car waiting for me up ahead. It had pulled over to the side, and whoever was driving would not stop honking at me. I didn't recognize the car. My heart gave a sudden terrifying lurch, and I took a step back. The driver was waving frantically at me, and only the fact that the driver was a woman gave me pause. My instincts told me to run like hell, but I worried that maybe she needed help. Maybe she'd run out of gas. Maybe she needed to borrow a cell phone. I stepped cautiously toward her. She leaned out of her car window. "Wow," she said, and laughed. "It's really hard to get your attention." She was a pretty older blonde lady. Her eyes seemed friendly enough, and my pulse slowed its stutter. "Are you okay?" I asked. "Did your car break down?" She smiled, looked curiously at me. "I'm Ocean's mom," she said. "My name is Linda. You're Shireen, right?" "Oh," I thought. "Shit, shit, shit. Oh, shit." I blinked at her. My heart was beating a staccato. "Would you like to go for a ride?" 29. "Listen," she said. "I want to get this out of the way right up front." She glanced at me as she drove. "I don't care about the differences in your backgrounds. That's not why I'm here." "Okay," I said slowly. "But your relationship is causing Ocean a real problem right now, and I'd be an irresponsible mother if I didn't try to make it stop." I almost laughed out loud. I didn't think this was the thing that would turn her into an irresponsible mother, I wanted to say. Instead, I said, "I don't understand why everyone is having this conversation with me. If you don't want your son to spend time with me, maybe you should be talking to him." "I tried," she said. "He won't listen to me. He's not listening to anyone." She glanced in my direction again. I suddenly realized I had no idea where we were going. "I was hoping," she said, "that you would be more reasonable." "That's because you don't know me,"
I said to her. Ocean is the reasonable one in the relationship. She actually cracked a smile. I'm not going to waste your time, I promise. I can tell that my son genuinely likes you. I don't want to hurt him, or you for that matter. But there are just things you don't know. Things like what?
Well, she said, and took a deep breath.
Things like I've always relied on Ocean getting a basketball scholarship. And then she looked at me. Looked at me for so long, I worried we'd crash into something. I can't risk him getting kicked off the team. I frowned. Ocean told me he didn't need a scholarship. He said that you had money set aside for him for college.
I don't.
What? I stared at her.
Why not?
That's really none of your business, she said.
Does Ocean know about this? I said. That you spent all his money for college?
She flushed unexpectedly, and for the first time I saw something mean in her eyes.
First of all, she said, it's not his money. It's my money. I am the adult in our household, and for as long as he lives under my roof, I get to choose how we live. And second of all, she hesitated, my personal affairs are not up for discussion.
I was floored. I said, why would you lie about something like that? Why wouldn't you just tell him that he has no money for college? Her cheeks had gone a blotchy, unflattering red, and her jaw was so tight I really thought she might snap and start screaming at me. Instead, she said very stiffly, our relationship is strained enough as it is. I didn't see the point in making things worse. And then she pulled to a sudden stop. We were in front of my house.
How do you know where I live? I said, stunned.
It wasn't hard to find out. She put the car in park, turned in her seat to face me. If you get him kicked off the team, she said, he won't be able to go to a good school. Do you understand that? She was looking me full in the face now, and it was suddenly hard to be brave. Her eyes were so patronizing, condescending. I felt entirely like a child.
I need you to tell me you understand, she said. Do you understand?
I understand, I said. I also need you to know that I don't care where your family is from. I don't care which faith you practice. Whatever you think of me, she said. I don't want you to think I'm a bigot, because I'm not, and I never raised my son to be that way either. I could only stare at her now. My breaths felt short, sharp. She was still talking. This is about more than taking a stand, okay? If you can believe it, I still remember what it was like to be 16. All those emotions, she said, waving a hand. It feels like the real deal. I actually married my high school sweetheart. Did Ocean tell you?
No, I said quietly.
Yes, she said, and nodded.
Well, you see how well that worked out.
Wow, I really hated her.
I just want you to understand, she said, that this isn't about you. This is about Ocean. And if you care about him at all, which I'm pretty sure you do, then you need to let him go. Don't cause him all this trouble, okay? He's a good boy. He doesn't deserve it.
I felt suddenly impotent with rage. I felt it dissolving my brain.
I'm really glad we had this talk, she said, and reached over me to push open my door. But I'd be grateful if you didn't tell Ocean it happened. I'd still like to salvage a relationship with my son.
She sat back, the open door screaming at me to get out. I felt then, in that moment, the insubstantial weight of my 16 years in a way I'd never felt before. I had no control here, no power. I didn't even have my driver's license. I didn't have a job. I didn't have my own bank account. There was nothing I could do. Nothing I could do to help, to make this better. I had no connections in the world, no voice anyone would listen to. I felt at once everything, everything, and nothing at all. I didn't have a choice anymore. Ocean's mother had taken my options away from me. She'd screwed up, and now it was my fault that Ocean would have no money for college. I'd become a convenient scapegoat. It felt too familiar. Still, I knew I had to do it. I'd have to drive a permanent wedge between us. I thought Ocean's mom was awful, but I also knew that I could no longer let him get kicked off the team.
I couldn't bear the weight of being the reason his life was derailed. And sometimes, I thought, being a teenager was the worst thing that had ever happened to me.
30. It was horrible. I didn't know how else to do it. It had been so hard for us to find time alone together, so I texted him. It was late, very late. Somehow I had a feeling he'd still be up. Hey, I need to talk to you. He didn't respond, and for some reason I knew it wasn't because he hadn't seen my message. I thought he knew me well enough to know that something was wrong, and I often wondered if he knew right then that something terrible was about to happen. He texted me back 10 minutes later.
No.
I called him.
Stop, he said when he picked up. He sounded raw.
Don't do this. Don't have this conversation with me, okay?
I'm sorry, he said. I'm so sorry about everything. I'm sorry I put you in this situation. I'm so sorry.
Ocean, please. What did my mom say to you?
What?
I felt thrown off. How did you know I talked to your mom?
I didn't, he said. But I do now. I was worried she was going to try to talk to you. She's been on my ass all week, begging me to break up with you.
And then, did she do this? Did she tell you to do this? I almost couldn't breathe.
Ocean, don't do it, he said. Not for her. Don't do this for any of them.
This is about you, I said. Your happiness, your future, your life. I want you to be happy, I said, and I'm only making your life worse.
How can you say that? He said, and I heard his voice break. How can you even think that?
I want this more than I've ever wanted anything. I want everything with you, he said.
I want all of it with you. I want you. I want this forever.
You're 17, I said. We're in high school, Ocean. We don't know anything about forever.
We could have it if we wanted it.
I knew I was being unkind, and I hated myself for it. But I had to find a way to get through this conversation before it killed me. I wish this were simpler, I said to him. I wish so many things were different. I wish we were older. I wish we could make our own decisions.
Don't, baby. Don't do this.
You can go back to your life now, you know? And I felt my heart splinter as I said it. My voice shook.
You can be normal again.
I don't want normal, he said desperately. I don't want whatever that is. Why don't you believe me?
I have to go, I said, because I was crying now.
I have to go, and I hung up on him. He called me back about 100 times, left me voicemails I never checked, and then I cried myself to sleep.
31. I had 2 weeks off for winter break, and I drowned my sorrows in music. I stayed up late reading. I trained hard. And I drew ugly, unimpressive things. I wrote in my diary. I made more clothes. I threw myself into practice. Ocean wouldn't stop calling me. He texted me over and over again. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. Part of me felt a little like I died, but here, in the silent explosion of my heart, was a quiet that felt familiar. I was just me again, back in my room with my books and my thoughts. I drank coffee in the mornings with my dad before he left for work. I sat with my mom in the evenings and binge-watched episodes of her favorite TV show, Little House on the Prairie, after she'd found the DVD box sets at Costco. But I spent most of my days with Navid. He'd come into my room that first night. He'd heard me crying, and he sat down on my bed, pulled the covers back, pushed my hair out of my face, and kissed me on the forehead.
Fuck this town, he said.
We hadn't really talked about it since then, and not because he hadn't asked. I just didn't have the vocabulary. My feelings were still inarticulate, comprising little more than tears and expletives. So we practiced. We didn't have access to the dance rooms at school over winter break,
and we were really sick of the cardboard boxes we'd used on weekends, so we splurged on an upgrade. We went to Home Depot, purchased a roll of linoleum, and jammed it into Navid's car. It was easy to unfurl the linoleum in deserted alleys and parking lots. Sometimes Jacoby's parents let us use their garage, but it didn't really matter where we were. We'd just set up our old boombox and breakdance. I'd mastered the crab walk pretty well, believe it or not. Navid had started teaching me how to do the cricket, which was a level of difficulty slightly higher than that, and I was getting better every day. Navid was thrilled, but only because he had a personal stake in my progress. Navid was still really invested in the school talent show, something I no longer cared even a little bit about. But he'd been planning it for so long that I didn't have the heart to tell him I didn't want to do it anymore. So I listened to his ideas about choreography, the songs he wanted to mix for the music, which beats were best for which power moves. I did it for him. I officially hated this school more than any other school I'd ever been to, and had absolutely zero interest in making an impression. But he'd trained me so patiently all these months, I couldn't turn back now. Besides, we were getting really good. The first week of winter break seemed to crawl by. It was impossible to deny, despite all empirical evidence to the contrary, that there wasn't a massive cavity in my chest where my emotions used to be. I felt numb all the time. I stared at Ocean's text messages before I fell asleep, hating myself for my own silence. I wanted desperately to text him back, to tell him that I loved him too. But I worried that if I reached out to him, I wouldn't be strong enough to walk away again. So many times, I thought, I tried to draw a line in the sand, and I was never strong enough to keep it there. If only I had. If only I'd told Ocean to go away after he followed me out of Mr. Jordan's class. If only I hadn't texted him later that night. If only I'd never agreed to talk to him at lunch. If only I'd never gone with Ocean to his car. Maybe he never would have kissed me, and maybe then I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have known what it was like to be with him, and none of this would have happened, and God, sometimes I really wished I could go back in time and erase all the moments that led to this one. I could have saved us both all this trouble, all this heartache. Ocean stopped texting me on week two. The pain became a drumbeat, a rhythm I could write a song to. It was always there, stark and steady, rarely abating. I learned to drown out the sound during the day, but at night, it screamed through the hole in my chest.
32. Yusuf had become a good friend of Navid's, and I'd been completely unaware of this until he started showing up to our breakdancing practices. Apparently, Navid had sold him on the art of breakdancing, and he was now interested in learning. We were practicing in the far corner of a rarely frequented Jack-in-the-Box parking lot when Yusuf first showed up, and I was upside down when I saw him. Navid had been in the middle of teaching me to spin on my head, and when he let go of my legs to say hi, I fell over on my ass.
"Oh my God!" I shouted. "What the hell, Navid?"
I shucked off my helmet, readjusted my scarf, and tried to sit up with some dignity. Navid only shrugged. "You have to work on your balance." "Hey," Yusuf said, and smiled at me. His eyes lit up. His whole face seemed to shine. Smiling was an objectively good look for him. "I didn't know you'd be here, too."
"Yeah," I said, and tugged absently at my sweater. I tried to smile back, but wasn't really feeling it, so I waved.
"Welcome." We spent the rest of the week together, all six of us. It was nice. Carlos and Bijan and Jacoby had somehow become my friends, too, which was comforting. They never really talked to me about what happened with Ocean, even though I knew they knew. But they were kind to me in other ways. They told me they cared without ever saying the words. And Yusuf was just cool, friendly, easy. It was kind of amazing, actually, not to have to explain everything to him all the time. Yusuf wasn't terrified of girls in hijab. They didn't perplex him. He didn't require a manual to navigate my mind. My feelings and choices didn't require constant explanations. He was never weird with me.
He never asked me dumb questions. He never wondered aloud whether or not I had to shower with that thing on. One day, last year, at a different high school, I was sitting in math class, and this guy I barely knew wouldn't stop staring at me. At all. 15 minutes passed, and finally I couldn't take it anymore. I spun around, ready to tell him to go to hell, when he said,
"Hey, okay. So what if you were having sex and that thing just, like, fell off your head? What would you do then?"
Yusuf never asked me questions like that. It was nice. He started hanging out at our house all the time, actually. He'd come over after practice to eat and play video games with my brother, and he was always really, really nice. Yusuf was the obvious choice for me. I knew that. I think he knew that, too, but he never said anything about it. He'd just look at me a little longer than most people did. He'd smile at me a little more than most people did. He waited, I think, to see if I'd make a move. I didn't. On New Year's Eve, I sat in the living room with my dad, who was reading a book. My dad was always reading. He read before work in the mornings and every evening before bed. I often thought he had the mind of a mad genius and the heart of a philosopher. I was staring at him that night and staring into a cold cup of tea, thinking, "Baba," I said.
"Hmm?"
He turned a page. "How do you know if you've done the right thing?" My dad's head popped up. He blinked at me and closed his book, removed his glasses. He looked me in the eye for only a moment before he said, in Farsi, "If the decision you've made has brought you closer to humanity, then you've done the right thing." "Oh." He watched me for a second, and I knew he was saying without speaking that I could tell him what was on my mind. But I wasn't ready. I still wasn't ready. So I pretended to misunderstand. "Thanks," I said. "I was just wondering." He tried to smile.
"I'm sure you've done the right thing," he said.
But I didn't think I had. 33. We went back to school on a Thursday, my heart lodged firmly in my throat. But Ocean wasn't there. He didn't show up for either of the classes we had together. I didn't know if he'd gone to school that day because I never saw him. And I suddenly worried that maybe he'd transferred classes. I couldn't blame him if he had, of course, but I'd been hoping for a glimpse of him, of his face. School was otherwise anticlimactic. I'd become a photoshopping error, and our 2 weeks away on break had given everyone some kind of amnesia. No one cared about me anymore. There was new gossip now, gossip that didn't concern me or my life. As far as I could tell, Ocean had been returned to his former status. There was no longer any need to panic, as I'd been surgically removed from his life. Everything was fine. People went back to ignoring me in the way they always had. I was sitting under my tree when I saw that girl again. "Hey," she said. Her long brown hair was tied up into a ponytail this time, but she was still unmistakably the same girl who told me I was a terrible person. I wasn't sure I wanted to say hi to her.
"Yes?"
"Can I sit down?" she said. I raised an eyebrow, but I said okay. We were both silent for a minute. Finally, she said,
"I'm really sorry about what happened, with that picture.
With Ocean." She was sitting cross-legged on the grass, leaning against my tree, and staring out toward the quad in the distance.
"That must have been really awful."
"I thought you said I was a terrible person." She looked at me then.
"People in this town are so racist. Sometimes it's really hard to live here."
I sighed, said, "Yeah, I know." "I kind of couldn't believe it when you showed up," she said, and she was looking away again. "I saw you on the first day of school. I couldn't believe you were brave enough to wear hijab here. No one else does." I broke off a blade of grass, folded it in half.
"I'm not brave," I said to her. "I'm scared all the time, too. But whenever I think about taking it off, I realize my reasons have to do with how people treat me when I'm wearing it. I think it would be easier, you know? So much easier. It would make my life easier not to wear it, because if I didn't wear it, maybe people would treat me like a human being. I broke off another blade of grass, tore it into tiny pieces. But that seemed